I was on retreat this past week down at Assumption Abbey in Ava, Missouri, which is down in the far south of Missouri. And the monastery is settled into a kind of a deep valley with trees and hills, little mountains all around it. And they don't have Wi-Fi, and there is no signal. So it was kind of nice. And I come back, and it's still standing. So it's a good reminder of that as well. And it wasn't just because, you know, it was so simple and no internet or anything like that, that I gave my face a break as well. So we'll see how long this facial hair lasts. But just a fair warning as well, at the end of Mass, I'm going to share a few things announcement-wise in terms of our financial status as a parish. We just finished the fiscal year, so I want to talk about that just a little bit. So hang in there with me, please. One of my best friends is a recovering addict and alcoholic. He was in the throes of his addiction for quite a few years before his current long stretch of recovery. He had gone to rehab at least a couple of times without it making much of a difference. People kept trying to help him, but nothing helped. He was and is an extremely likable and charismatic personality. Finally, after having almost bankrupted his family and endangered his kids and hawked family vehicles and other possessions to feed his addiction, his wife and other family members kicked him out of the house. And he lived homeless for quite a while. And for whatever reason that God only knows, that's when he got into an AA program that finally stuck. And he's been clean and sober now for just over 15 years. And I wonder if during his addiction, he perceived mercy from family and friends as coming with strings attached. I'll help you, but you have to be good in these ways. I'm not saying that that was their intention at all, but maybe how he perceived it. And maybe after he lost everything and then somehow perceived that God still cared for him and would continue to care for him, whether he was drunk or sober, maybe then for the first time, he got a glimpse of what unconditional love is like. And then, in full freedom, he could choose to respond. God has a passion for our freedom. Because in freedom, we can choose to love. In our first reading from the book of Deuteronomy, Moses reminds the people and us that God has provided a law which can help us. He's not going to force us to carry out that law, and he's not going to punish us for failing to carry out that law. The law is intended to save us from the consequences of sin, not to punish us if we disobey it. In other words, our starting point in this world isn't neutral. And then we choose to sin or to grow in virtue. We begin our life here in a fallen world and in sin. And God offers to save us from it and from ourselves. And so if we refuse, it's not God punishing us, but letting us choose sin, everything that comes along with it. Moses says that the law of God isn't far away. You know, we can tend to do that. Say, oh, it's so hard. It's such a high bar. It's such a far distance to get there. No, he says, it's in our mouths and in our hearts. We have only to carry it out if we so choose. and thus be saved. In the gospel, the scholar of the law asked the question, who is my neighbor? It's really a question, who's worthy to be my neighbor? Who's good enough to have my mercy? At the end of the gospel, Jesus flips the question, who was neighbor to the injured man? Everyone is my neighbor, and I act as a true neighbor when I act with mercy. The difficulty sometimes is discerning what mercy looks like. My friend had a lot of people act toward him with mercy, but it was only when his wife kicked him out onto the streets and trusted him to God, and then a year later took him back, that he experienced the mercy that changed his life. In the first place, the Samaritan traveler in Jesus' parable is Jesus himself. The same Jesus that our second reading from Colossians describes as one through whom and for whom all things were created, and in whom all things hold together. The beginning, the firstborn from the dead, who brings mercy and peace through the blood of his cross. Notice that in the man in the parable is leaving the holy city of Jerusalem and heading to the sinful city of Jericho. Notice that he's free to do so. God doesn't stop him. But in doing so, the man risks many dangers. The robbers represent all the evils of this fallen world, including the devil and his demons. And Jesus, the Samaritan traveler, is moved with compassion at the sight of him. He comes to heal him with oil and wine, and to bandage him and lift him up onto his own animal, and takes him to the inn, to the church, to take care of him. Notice that he did all of this without placing any demands on the man. It was simply an act of compassion. But notice, too, that Jesus let the man get to the point of death first. He let him get to the point of finally understanding that this world held nothing for him. That only Jesus can raise him up. Only Jesus can heal him through the sacraments and the care of God's people, the church. And all the while, leaving him free to leave the inn and get back on that path to Jericho. Or, to become, as Jesus says at the end of the gospel, one who will go and do likewise. Jesus gives us the truest example of mercy as one who loves without condition, with perfect freedom, and who offers a mercy that first and foremost seeks to heal our spiritual sickness. It profits us nothing to be healthy physically and to have lost our soul. Unconditional love that wills the eternal good of the other with profound respect for their freedom. That's the mercy that Jesus shows to us today and commands us, go and do likewise. Each one of us is free to do just that. So here's the homework for the week. This week, remember that everyone is your neighbor and show them mercy in the first place by desiring with all your heart the eternal good of their soul.